downtown between Airport Way and the river and kind of out there in Lathrop Street, and bounded on the east by the river pretty much. And they just completed a series of homes. Weeks Field was a nicer residential area with some permanent professional type of people. They had just completed Westgate, which was a mile from town at that time, which was really out in the sticks, and a little lower level residential units. They were filled up and more or less middle class administrative type of personnel. They just completed these little beehives, Hebenerdick houses around, low cost housing.
What are those houses called?
Oh, we call them beehives because they're just right straight up and they're two stories and they're just blocks. And before that, pretty much it was a construction type of town, boom town from the war years, building up of LAD and LAD Air Force Base and Eielson Air Force Base.
When you were doing construction, what was the construction for?
Well, it's general construction. I worked on sewer system, water system in downtown Fairbanks now, but it was just getting community water and to downtown Fairbanks when I was working on it. I can remember, and my brother lived right downtown across from the Northwood building, a little apartment there, efficiency type apartment, and it was before the community water was in there, and taking a bath, and a guy really wanted to take a bath in those days. You could sit in the bathtub with about, 3 or 4 inches of water and not be able to see the bottom of the bathtub because of the rusty water. And it turned the liquor black. You know, you turn bourbon and water and it comes out black. And people were drinking a lot of bottled water in those days. And I worked on LAD Air Force Base, concrete type of work. They were doing a lot of construction out there, roads, building more residences, sidewalks, curbs and gutters and sidewalks where I was. They worked out at Galena, laying asphalt, worked on the North Slope, unloading the dew line.
This is about 57, 58?
Yes, 56, 57, 58, yeah.
Why did you come up here to work?
Well, as in those days, employment—you could make a good wage up here if you got into the union. It was always a strong union town, and the wages were very well, very very good compared to outside because the work was dangerous and short term type of work. And Charlie, my brother, graduated from law school, and when he graduated from law school, he went to work for the Veterans Administration in Juneau. Worked there for a year, and then he came to Fairbanks and clerked up here for Judge Forbes, who was a United States District Court judge. He really wasn't a district court judge, but that's what they called him. And then after he had worked there for a year, went into private practice, and I needed to work, and he said thought he could get us a job up here, so I came up. And as it turned out, we played both Charlie and I played baseball, high school and college, and through that playing ball, the laborers had a baseball team, and as a result of that, we were able to find work for me at Orbeck, as a matter of fact. And those were tough days in the labor unions, labor movement around here.
When you graduated from law school, what made you come up and practice?
Well, I suppose Charlie, my brother, when I got out of law school, people were being paid $250 and $350 a month in Seattle, Charlie indicated I'd come up here and work for him. I thought I'd come up and work for a couple of years and find out what the practice of law was about, and then I'd go back and find someplace else to practice. But, you know, you come up here and start getting involved, and pretty soon you're hooked.
What was the practice like when you first started out?
Oh, I don't know that it's that much different than it is today. I suppose a little lower level. I suppose things were, cost of living was so much less. Even the cost of living in Fairbanks was high at that time compared to outside, but it was quite a little bit less expensive here. We did a lot of real estate. I did a lot of real estate transactions in those days. There was a lot of property changing hands. Things were on a slower rate. They were on a lower level at those times. Didn't have any or very few big clients. It was mostly the common average citizen. Just a standard type of law practice, a will now and then, a divorce now and then, driving under the influence, adoptions, did quite a few adoptions in those days, small amount of criminal work, former corporation now, just general practice along, but on a lower level because things were relatively modest, and Fairbanks has always been a boom town and a bust, and we just go boom town, bust town, boom, bust, and mostly bust, but I think a little more relaxed.
Was there a minimum fee schedule?
Yes, there's a minimum fee schedule.
Do you have a copy of it?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'll look around for it here while we're talking. I have several of them, as a matter of fact.
Who were the big clients at the time you came, 59, 60? Who were the
people? Oh, I would say the banks were pretty big clients. First National Bank, we had two banks only in those days, First National Bank and Alaska National Bank. I would say First Federal just started into existence a short time before that. First Federal Savings and Loan. Wien Airlines was a big client. I think they're always the insurance companies. Daily News Miner, probably. Oil companies were, just oil suppliers, that type of Usabelli Mines. That's all I can think of right now.
Do you know who represented them? I can go down the list you just said.
Well, I think Chuck Clasby, he had a very good practice. He was well respected in the days, and it was Clasby and Miller when Mary Alice Miller was later a district court judge. Chuck represented Wien Airlines and First National Bank. First National was the old established bank here with the Strokers, Eddie and Bill Stroker. Snedden, of course, I think he probably used Chuck Clasby, and Mary Alice Miller did quite a little bit of defense work.
Who's Snedden?
C.W. Snedden, he's the owner of Daily News Miner.
Was this Clasby practice something that Collins had done with him?
Sure. Yeah, but E.B. Collins, he had retired shortly before I came here. And it was Collins and Clasby. And when Charlie went to work, my brother went to work for Collins and Clasby. He was worked up there in the, as I recall, it was in the Polaris building. And then they moved, Collins kind of retired before I got here, and then they moved over to the First National Bank building right there in the corner of 2nd and Cushman. Chuck Clasby upstairs, and I think it was Mary Alice Miller went with him. Walter Scudlow was practicing with Collins and Clasby, I think, at the time when Charlie was there. Charlie was more or less clerking. It was Collins and Clasby with Scud Lowe and Mary Alice Miller, and then Charlie was kind of a new man in the office.
Did Scud Lowe go to First Federal?
Yes, he pretty much almost before I started practicing law was full time with First Federal.
And had it been with Clasby first?
Pardon me?
Had First Federal been with Clasby first, or?
I think so. I think that the Collins and Clasby firm started First Federal, but I think that Scud Lowe was working for them at that time, and Scud Lowe kind of took First Federal with him when he left. But you know, you'll have to talk to Charlie. Charlie'd have more information on that.
You think the law firm started the bank, or just started working for the bank?
No, I don't. It was a group of people. I remember John Weston was in on that original board or whatever they called it. Another person's, you know, actually, Charlie would be better to talk to, and he'd give you that background on that.
There's one more question on it. Is it tied to First Federal in Anchorage?
No.
They're totally separate.
Well, they're probably merged, but just only in the recent, you know, last year as a result of all the problems involving Federal Savings and Loans Associations.
Good to know. Who did the Lucibelli Mines? Do you know who represented them?
Probably Clasby, but I don't...
Clasby, yeah. You know. Were there any other big firms that...
Bill Bogus has always been around town, been a very respected attorney for a number of years, and I don't know what the nature of his practice was. I think it was, you know, some real estate and small construction companies. There were an awful lot of small construction companies around town. Bob Parrish was on his own at this time. And Bob had a number of personal injury cases that he was always trying to get to trial and was unable to get to trial. Judge Forbes, he was a United States District Judge here, and I don't know, he just didn't get any cases to trial. You just wouldn't try cases. There's a lot of talk about that, but I think the scuttlebutt was that he was afraid to take cases to trial. He just didn't want to try cases because of just a new area for him. He was afraid of getting reversed and that type of thing. And not only that, but one of the things there was about Forbes had about three or four cases under advisement at the time of statehood, terminated his jurisdiction as a result of statehood. He had about four or five cases under advisement, and they all lost, and he had to try them all over again. And Parrish was absolutely wild about the thing.
What is Forbes' background? Do you know?
Charlie could tell you about that a heck of a lot better. Charlie and Forbes were very close. He came from Upper Midwest. Dakotas kind of sticks in my mind. But it might have been further east than that.
When you first got here, what was the bar exam like?
Oh, I didn't think it was that demanding. It was a special bar exam, of course, because of what I expressed prior to being talking here. What happened is I was supposed to take the bar in the fall of 1959, but by Charlie messed up somehow, and another Forbes was Murdy Scheibel Staley. In those days, it started out McNeely, Murdy's, Camaro and Fitzgerald, I think it was. And McNeely was in the Senate and had been for years and had a number of clients, insurance clients. Ed Murdy's was just recently out of the Attorney General's office. and a very aggressive business getter and a hard worker. Fitzgerald really never joined the firm. He was appointed a judge in Anchorage almost before he started the practice with the firm.
Had he been in Fairbanks?
Not that I know of. I didn't have any knowledge or experience with that. But anyway, going back to the bar exam, and then we'll get into Taylor and Warren Taylor, Taylor and Crane, Crane and Taylor, and on and on. They switched back and forth over a number of years, but Charlie messed up, and I wasn't able to take the bar.
Charlie messed up.
Oh, he didn't get my application in soon enough. Just a late filing of some type, some technical filing, and Calamarides wouldn't. He was executive director, would not waive the formality. So the bar. There was a large number of failures that year. And so they petitioned to take the bar, as I recall, someplace in the spring, summer of 60, and we took it at that time. And I remember Bob Irwin coming out of the exam and saying, "Well, I passed that one." It really wasn't that demanding, but that's not absolutely conclusive, because you can take an easy test and grade it hard, or you can take a hard test and grade it easy. But it was heavily laced with hearsay questions, oodles and oodles of hearsay questions. I wrote the same thing about hearsay questions until my fingers nearly fell off. But we didn't get the results for a long time.
When did you get your results? You took it in 1960?
As I recall, it was in 1960. As I recall, we got the results in December of 60. I think I took it in the spring of 60 and got the results in December, and then maybe got admitted in early 61. Yeah. Although I'd have to go back and check the records on that.
Oh, tell me about Taylor and Crane.
Oh, Taylor. Taylor, at that time, there was a lot of talk going around. Judge Jay Rabinowitz was prosecuting attorney at that time, and Taylor was on a tremendous winning streak on driving under the influence cases. And there was a lady in the district attorney's office by the name of Paula somebody, I don't remember her name, last name, and he had won something like 16 or 17 in a row from her, and he tried them all the same way, and one of his sayings was, argue to the jury, he'd say, well, he says, had bloodshot eyes, his teeth clicking away, staggered when he walked, she swayed back and forth, had a smell of alcohol about him. He says, I could play it on a piano. And it was the truth. You know, every driving under the influence case was the same. And he and Fred Crane, they tried a lot of criminal cases and had, good results. I can remember Warren telling me one time, I think he tried some 40 to 50 murder cases. A lot of murder cases, I think. And they were a very colorful pair. You could talk to Judge Rabinowitz on this one. They were just starting to record the proceedings on tape. Before that time, they'd always taken them down stenograph type of machines. So Warren was, I guess Fred was defending this lady. And he said, went into court, first opening, and Judge Rabinowitz had listened to the record later on, just trying to find out what was going on, and not listening for anything in particular, but just reviewing the thing. And so Warren was going, Fred was going on saying, "Well, I'd like to associate Mr. Taylor with me on this case. Mr. Taylor has expertise in this matter and has a great deal of knowledge about the facts of the case, and wonder if the court at this late date would allow Mr. Taylor to join in." And Judge Rabinowitz says, "Yes, that's fine." And Judge Rabinowitz said he was listening to the tape later on, and he said at that time Taylor leaned over to Crane and says, "Say, Fred, what's she charged with anyway?" You know, and it was kind of typical. You just pick up a file and go to court and still do a good job. And
Yes.
And they switched back and forth. Fred Crane used to tell about he was a crusty old fellow and you know, kind of hard of gold type of thing. But he'd talk about racing Warren to the mailbox in the morning to pick up the checks with any mail in them, you know. And I think it was almost literally true. And Bill Taylor went in with him, and then Bill Taylor split off from him as Taylor and Bogus. And, yeah, Millard Ingram, he's an attorney in town. He came into town about the same time I did, and in those one time about 10 years ago, we started counting the number of attorneys who had gone through this town during the time that we'd been here. And that's some 10 years ago. We counted up 200 attorneys who had come and gone during that period of time. A lot of them in the district attorney's office, and a lot of people in private practice just came and gone. And it's still, I bet we could count up, I bet you there's been 400 to 500 attorneys come and gone through this town during the time that I've been here.
What about Stevens? Did you ever hear stories about him? Was he still here when you were here?
Yes, I can remember when I, but only, only in the grossest way. I mean, only in the slightest way. I can remember two things. One about Senator Rivers or Ralph Rivers, Congressman Ralph Rivers. I can remember going over to his house one night, talking about statehood. Ralph and Charlie and myself and a couple other people I can't remember now. And he was talking about how the statehood was going to come and how he was going to run and. Felt good about it. And I can remember going over to one time Charlie, my brother, had some, as I recall, some skis in Ted Stevens' basement. And you'd have to talk to Charlie about Ted Stevens. He had quite a reputation as a prosecutor, a hard prosecutor. And it was difficult in those days to get convictions. It was a very transient, kind of lawless type of town. B-girls and bars and blue rooms and after-hours places. And it was, as I say, it was just, you know, and those were the mid-50s even. Maybe even before I was in the practice of law, it was kind of a wide-open town. Really was.
Has the practice gotten more stable?
Oh yes. Yeah, stable. I don't know exactly what you mean by stable. It's more of a. There's more bigger business now. There's more. It's more like a big city practice. The criminal law. We used to do a felony every once in a while. You hardly ever do a felony anymore because felony case, because most of those cases are tried by the public defender's office. And yeah, it's more stable. People have more money, willing to spend it more. There's more money in town. It isn't so tight like it used to be.
You were here during the court bar fight.
Yes, I was on the Board of Governors at that time. Yes.
tell me about it from a Fairbanks perspective. What happened?
Well, it was, I got, you know, I got a big drawer. I don't know, maybe I just threw it away. I was just thinking the other day, I have to talk to my secretary and see if I just threw it away because I, you know, it's been there for years and years. And I thought, well, everybody else has records of it, so why should I keep mine? I don't know, it was kind of a wild time. It was kind of precipitated by the suspension of Neil McKay. And Neil was kind of a wild guy, but still had a number of friends in the bar. And in those days, it just seemed like brother, you just have to go back and check the records. But it just seemed like about every other day we were getting some kind of an order down from the Chief Justice, who was assuming more and more powers of the. Over the bar, and made it very clear that he was controlling the Bar Association. I think that one of his problems was the fact that there were just never any discipline of the members of the bar, and we had as well as the town being questionable tactics. There were some people in the bar who were very questionable practitioners, and somebody would file a grievance against a member of the bar and never see the light of day. They'd just never make any disposition of the darn thing. And so he was, the Chief Justice wanted to, you know, change that, and excuse me, and Neil McKay had some kind of a overreaching type of complaint. Neil was a businessman attorney, always in business, and somehow they accused him of overreaching, and Neil called up all these friends, and you know, we were just going from day to day, another order come out, everybody say, how wild, that's wild, can't believe, can't do that type of thing, and we got all very emotional. It was about that time that we had a bar convention, and it was in Anchorage, and of course the great bar fight was right on everybody's top of everybody's mind. I guess it's kind of an egotistical thing to say, but we were having dinner down there in some kind of a banquet. There's somebody else and myself there, and we hadn't pre-filed any resolutions, and we were sat down there and we penned out this resolution where it said, as I recall, that the board of Bar Association requests and directs the Board of Governors to, can't remember what it was. It was some type of resist the efforts of the Supreme Court to take over the Bar Association. We penned it out right there. This other guy, I think it was Ed Niewarner and myself, just penned it out. Dumped it into the hopper the next day, and it came up, and I read the darn thing, and Stefovich, who was a big power in the bar at that time, leaps forward and says, this is a great resolution. I asked unanimous consent that this thing go through, and everybody was so hyped up that it just went right on through. And as it turned out, the resolution did have some problems with it. It was drafted kind of on a back of a napkin, literally on the back of a napkin is where it was drafted. But and it was a tough go. We had many meetings. I brought up the Chief Justice from state of Washington, Rossellini, as I recall, was it?
Yeah.
And he mediated the thing. Bill Arnold was there, and Gene Wiles.
What were things like?
There were board of the members of Board of Governors at that time.
Was Fairbanks pretty well behind it?
Oh yes, poor old Harry Aaron was the one that took the beating on it, and really didn't deserve it. He was a gentleman all the way through. I don't think he was a great legal scholar. By the same token, he was a perfect gentleman at all times, and he's one of, until a few years ago, and I haven't kept any statistics, or I don't keep any statistics anyway, but I haven't heard of anybody. I don't look that frequently, but under the Missouri plan that we have, I think he was the only, there was only two that had ever been not retained, and he was one of them. And it was really directed against the Chief Justice, Nesbitt. That's who the thing was directed against, and we ran a campaign, got on TV, and 10, 12, 13 members of the bar got on TV, and spoke, one of the issues I recall was who was going to pay for a jury trial, that type of thing. But even after Harry Aaron was not retained, came back after a while, practiced law in Fairbanks, and perfect gentleman, very nice man, very nice man.
Had he ever been associated with anyone in Fairbanks?
Well, that was before my time. See, when I came here, I hadn't been here very long, and they put the statehood, judiciary system into play, and he was picked, and Everett Heck was picked, and so he went on to the Superior Court bench almost, when I got here. It wasn't very, I got here in October, and it wasn't very long after that that he went to the Superior Court bench, and then the three Supreme Court justices were Nesbitt, Hodges, and Diamond. And Hodges was shortly after that picked for the United States District Court job. And at that time, I think it was Harry Aaron was selected for Supreme Court. So Hodges wasn't on the Supreme Court very long, I would suppose. 2 or 3 months or something like that, as I recall.
No, I'd heard that. Do you remember who the members of the bar who spoke on TV were?
Yes. Who? Sure. You don't want to put that in there. It was all of us. Charlie, me, Vaugus, Bill Taylor, Clasby, Mary Alice Miller, Stepovich. There's 13 of us, as I recall. I don't know. We were all in it together. There was a couple. In those days, we had, as I recall, we had 26 members of the bar, someplace around 26 and 29. And we had, when I first came here, we had 26 or 28 members of the bar and two members. Let me see. There was Forbes and a clerk and one other person. There were four or five public employees at that time. Forbes, there was a district attorney, Dwayne Krask was kind of magistrate at that time. Ledessa Nordale and Dwayne Krask were magistrates at that time.
Is Ledessa Nordale related to the Nordales who practiced in Mary and
Yes.
Jim?
Yes. She's
sister?
No, no. Ledesa is quite elderly. Ledesa must be, if she's still alive, I don't even know if she's still alive, must be in her 80s now, 70s, high 70s, 80s. Pardon me?
Could she be an aunt?
I'm sure. But yeah.
Dwayne Krask is down in Juneau?
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
So that you only had five people who were working for the federal government then?
Yes. Well, the only point is that the point was that we stayed that way for, you know, the number of private practitioners for a number of years after that, but the number of state employees just grew and grew and grew until, you know, you take a look around now, there's I don't know exactly what it is now, but a couple of years ago, we had as many in the private practice, I mean, in the public practice of law, as there was in the private practice of law. The number of public jobs supporting lawyers is immense in Fairbanks.
Does it help to hurt the profession?
You know, those are philosophical questions that people could argue with both ways.
As a person in the private sector, how do you feel about all these public employees or public lawyers?
There should be a good answer to that. I don't have any good answer to it.
Has it affected your practice?
Yeah, I think so. As I indicated a little earlier, we don't try any felony cases anymore, or the number of felony cases that you try are very small. I think that there are more, we get more cases that are kind of anti-government right now because government is so large and so all-encompassing, and each one of them has an attorney representing them and represent them, you know, forcefully and aggressively. And it, sure, it makes a difference. And
what kind of anti-government cases have you been getting?
Oh, personnel type of cases. People that are terminated from jobs. OSHA type of matters. We did some didn't have a case, but we did some work in securities, which is a very complex and branch of the law. That's, you know, FAA, that type of thing.
What kind of regard do people have for attorneys in Fairbanks? How do people feel about lawyers?
That's hard for an attorney to say. We generally say that most of the times we talk about it is that people don't have a very high regard for attorneys except for their own attorney who they have, you know, faith in. We only went to the we were highly pleased that the people followed us when we went to the people on Justice Aaron and followed us. And everybody said, "Well, the attorneys are opposing him. That's the best thing that'll put him in for certain." And it didn't follow. We've had a couple cases since that time where there's been mild disapprovals of a bar, of a judge, but not a concerted campaign, and the judge won, but I think it winged him. I don't know. I think anti-attorney talk is easy, but I don't think there's always people who have a very emotional way of speaking, and they talk down attorneys. But I don't get an anti-attorney feeling in town.
Has it remained the same throughout the years you've been here?
I think the bar is generally held in higher regard now than it's been in the past. But you know, we're being flooded now in the last 3 or 4 years. I don't know. I can't even remember. I don't keep track of how many people are coming in. But there are attorneys in town now that I don't know, and firms in town that I have never heard of. And that's only happened, you know, happened the last couple of years. You know, I know every attorney in town. It's a small town. We know everybody in town. And now I don't. Just different in the last couple of years. So with a lot of different people coming in, it's difficult to assess what's really going on around town. And I you know, since I moved out here, I used to have my office right down there on 2nd and Cushman. Had it there for years and years and years. So I, you know, I'd go down there and have a cup of coffee or have lunch with the guys or go to the Bar Association meetings, knew what was going on in town. Well, I moved out here. You know, on the way home. It's still on the way to work and on the way home. So, you know, I haven't been kept as good a track as I had in previous years.
Did most people used to go to bar meetings?
Oh, yes.
Are they heavily attended?
I don't know. I for the first 10, 15 years that I was here, attended bar meetings on a weekly basis, you know, could hardly wait, found them exciting. And, you know, then I felt that the bar started drifting away from, you know, what was a proper function of the Bar Association. I always thought the Bar Association was to improve the lot of attorneys and to make the practice of law better, and by making it better for attorneys, by making it better for clients. And they got involved with marijuana. We ought to legalize marijuana, and then we got to the position where there was a large number of state employees controlling the Bar Association. I quit and I haven't been back since. Kind of a bad guy.
Can you compare Juneau and Anchorage? What's Fairbanks' view of Juneau and Anchorage bars? Is there?
Oh, sure. We think of Juneau as a, you know, kind of a tight little ship, very provincial. I'm not saying that the attorneys don't have their have ability or anything like that, because they most certainly do. But it's kind of like the ivory tower. Everything is very staid. That's what the impression we get. It's the legislature. A lot of people make a lot of money off of the legislature and the fact that the capital is there and the fishing industry Anchorage is more of a cosmopolitan commercial center, growing hand over fist, can't keep track of the business, can't keep track of the attorneys, can't keep track of the judges, and you know, it's thought of as the big city, Seattle of Alaska type of thing. We kind of The frontier type. We consider ourselves, I think, freedom oriented more, outdoor oriented, more relaxed than the pressure situation in Anchorage, more cosmopolitan, so to speak, than Juneau. Transportation, outdoors, mining, frontier type. That's the way we consider ourselves.
Oh, outside lawyers. Are there any outside lawyers here, outside people representing big interests? Or when you first started, were there Seattle lawyers or California counsel? Did you ever run into things like that?
Yeah, but not very frequently. You know, there's once in a while we have a specialist come up. Some guy, there was a Burgess Construction had a attorney in St. Louis, and Aiken in St. Louis from Seattle to come up and represent Burgess. Aiken, Wally Aiken had a number of clients up here. Odom, a big distributor. Odom Distributor, and Milt Odom is his name.
And Wally Aiken handled his stuff too.
That's my gut reaction. I think that's true. Medical malpractice expert come up, prosecuting a doctor, you know, for on a negligence type of theory. But we haven't most of the time those people come up, they associate with local counsel. Pardon me?
Who did Wally Aiken associate with, or didn't?
I don't know.
I know Milt Odom used to be represented by Renfrew in Anchorage, but I have no idea who he was.
I don't know either.
Do you know the name of the medical malpractice person?
No, I don't know him. I'd have to, you know, go back and take a look. He got thrown out of his firm, and it was a big brouhaha down there in Seattle. It was a bad one.
What do you see as the trend in feminism for lawyers? Is it going to change? Are they going to become less trenchant?
Yeah, I think that there are going to be it seems like that they're not building the big firms in town. Seems like more and more are coming into private practice and practicing for themselves or with another person or two. Big firms are not building. Murdy's, Scheibel, Staley, and Delisio. Ed Murdy's is now starting his own private practice, I think. He's leaving the firm, I think. And they haven't built for a number of years. They might take on one and lose one, and they might have added one or two. Rice Hoppner, they have stayed more or less the same. They add one goes. They might have picked up one or two in the years, but for every one that's joined a large firm, there's been three or four gone into the private practice of law. I think it's going to become more stable. I think it's going to become less personal. I think it's already become less personal. I think that we used to, you know, practice on a more or less relaxed level, and more you're required to comply with the rules specifically, and if you don't comply with the rules specifically, you're liable to be defaulted or some action taken adversely to your client. I think I'm sure it's less transient. We were switching judges there for quite a little while, but they've got those salaries up there to the point and benefits up to the point that those people are staying until they, quote, retire, unquote. I don't know. That's about the size of it.